you doing? Are we live? We are. I think we're live. I think we're live. Coming to you live today from Douglas on the Isle of Man, from the Red Lion pub on the Isle of Man. Flew in last night, and I'm hoping this'll work. Give us a double Bacardi and Coke there, Michael. Flew in. Isle of Man left lockdown completely today. No masks, no face nappies, no social distancing. Hang on a second, hang on. A double Bacardi and Coke, please. And a packet of pork scratchings. Right, got Vernon Coleman on the programme a bit later on. Hope we'll be able to connect with him. And before that, it's Kevin Barrett, live from Wisconsin. Put a pound on the pool table for me, a pound. Put a pound on the pool table. Lovely stuff. Vernon Coleman then, none other than Vernon Coleman, and Kevin Barrett, the Richie Allen Radio Show, live from Douglas on the Isle of Man. I know. I'm the biggest child that ever lived, you know that. Welcome to the programme, Monday's programme.
It's the Richie Allen Show. Broadcasting live on richieallen.co.uk and multiple platforms around the world. And now, here's your host, Richie Allen.
Oh, I'd love to be on the Isle of Man for real now with a double Bacardi and Coke, speaking to you via the medium of outside broadcast, but you can't have everything. As I said, Dr. Vernon Coleman, vernoncoleman.com, hour two. Before that, Kevin Barrett, live from Madison in Wisconsin, Monday's Richie Allen programme. February the 1st, and we're nearly through the winter, aren't we? Kind of. Yeah, we're getting there. All right. Lovely. I know. Big Egypt. You big baldy Egypt. I'm well aware of it. The Red Lion on the Isle of Man. Let's crack on then. I want to say hi to Mark in Salford, who stopped me this morning, scared the living bejesus out of me. In the pitch dark, in the very, very early hours, I was out doing my thing and Mark came up behind me. A jogger came up behind me wearing a hoodie. That's not good. In Salford, at that hour of the morning, gave me a bit of a start. I got a bit of a start, so I did. Anyway, Mark's a listener. He works nights, never misses the programme. He's involved in a local rugby league club. He'd be well known for that. And he's currently fundraising for them. We had a chat about that as well. So, Mark, how you doing? Thanks for restarting my heart this morning and for saying hello. Now listen to this. Household coronavirus testing will be rolled out across parts of England after concerns that the South African variant might be spreading in some regions. A small number of people, two, have been found to be infected with the South African variant despite having no travel links, meaning that all those over the age of 16 in affected areas will be asked to take a PCR test. The government said the so-called surge testing, will begin in London, W7, N17, CR4, that's Ealing, Haringey and Croydon, in Walsall in the West Midlands, in Broxbourne in the east of England, and in Maidstone and Guildford in the southeast, and also Preston in the northwest, which is not far from here. The announcement came when Surrey County Council said today the two people had caught the more infectious coronavirus variant and they had no links to South Africa or to previous travellers to South Africa. 9,000 people need to be surge tested. Here's Tim Oliver, the leader of Surrey County Council, speaking to Enda Brady from Sky.
So what we're trying to do is to test or offer tests to as many people as possible that live in the geographical area of the two individuals that have been identified as having the South African variant. We reckon that's between 9 and 10,000 people. So it's mobilising, you know, the volunteers to get out there and start knocking on the doors.
Now those test kits have just arrived on pallets inside the fire station. Just talk us through, if you're a resident and you're in those two affected areas, Goldsworth Park and St John's, just tell us what they can expect.
Yes, so what will happen starting from tomorrow morning There'll be a knock on the door. They'll be given a letter which will explain exactly what's happening and answering some sort of standard questions. Then every member of the household will be given a testing kit and invited to do the tests themselves. And then somebody will come back and collect those kits a little bit later in the day. They'll then be sent off to a testing centre, and then they will be notified in due course whether they're positive or negative.
Yes, held positively. Deliciously dystopian. Imagine. And they're going to turn up to people's houses wearing those big space suits. They really are, to collect these things. So they'll post these things through the letterbox, and you'll have to test yourself and your family and then wait for them to be collected by guys with this, have you got your test? And then they'll take the test away. There's nothing people won't accept, I don't think. Here's the Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, on the scary new variants.
We're confident that all the vaccines that we're using provide a high degree of immunity and protection against all variants. And the interesting and exciting thing about UK vaccinology at the moment, the vaccines that we're developing, is increasingly they are capable of being adapted to deal with new variants as they arise. Fact is, we're going to be living with COVID for a while to come in one way or another. I don't think it will be as bad as the last 12 months, anything like, of course, but it's very, very important that our vaccines continue to develop and to adapt, and they will.
We're going to be living with COVID for one way or another, forever and ever, amen. No chance the reporter would ask Boudreau about Basingstoke. No chance. Hey, Prime Minister, 22 people out of 65 people have dropped brown bread, Boudreau, after having the vaccine. We think after having the vaccine. Any comment? No chance. No chance, no chance. And by the way, Thomas Moore, who's Sky News, I think he's their technology correspondent or something like that. He's been talking today about a scary new Californian variant. Have you seen that? There's a scary new Californian variant. Do you see how this is going to play out over the next 25,000 years? Oh, we were doing well, but then, well, then you have the Ballymun variant. We found a variant in Ireland, the Ballymun variant. We think that one or two people in England might have come into contact with some people from Ballymun, and therefore we think that we've got to come to your house and put the test through your letterbox, and you're going to have to give us the test back, and until we do that, we can't go out, we can't do anything. And then the Ballymun variant, we'll get on top of that, and then there'll be a variant from Forfar and Airdrie in Scotland, and then there'll be a variant from, I don't know, Gijón in Spain. The Gijón variant. Oh, Jesus, there's the Gijón variant now. We can't go out again for another while, and so on, so on, so on. Californian variant. Thomas Moore, look it up if you don't believe me. Yesterday, the Health Secretary, Matt Hancock, said, sure, we could have a grand old summer, so we could just take the feckin' vaccine, and you'll have a grand summer. He did say that yesterday to Andrew Marr, amongst others. But today, SAGE members and other scientists have said that Matt Hancock's a bit of an idiot. We're not sure now. We'll have to wait and see. It could be the autumn before we have a summer, if you know what I mean. Matt Hancock was out jogging today and he noticed a Daily Mail photographer and he had a David Brent moment. Did you see this? He started sprinting towards the cameras when he noticed them, like a feckin' idiot. Honestly, absolutely vaudeville. What a dickhead. Boris Johnson was out running too. I don't need to say anything. Just picture it. Picture it. There you are. Yeah, you've got it. Piers Morgan, host of Good Morning Britain, co-host with Susanna Reid, announced that his mum had a bad reaction, or I should say, a reaction to her COVID. I had too many drinks in that pub in the Isle of Man. Piers Morgan said his mum had a bad reaction to her COVID vaccine, but not really bad. Here he is, Piers Morgan, this morning.
So my parents had the jab on glorious Saturday, is it now, is with 600,000 people, 1% of the entire population of this country got vaccinated on Saturday, including my parents at their local place in East Sussex. And they said it was very efficient, very quick, very painless, all very happy. But my mum's then got quite a bad reaction to her jab. No, I say bad, like a sort of flu-y reaction, and she's in bed. a lot of people are getting a little bit or a little bit more reaction.
A little bit of reaction there. Marvellous. Yes, and I sincerely hope his mum will be okay. Of course I do. If his mum wasn't to be okay, God forbid, I wonder would he say anything about it? I wonder. But of course, let's hope his mum is fine, like everybody else who gets it, even though they don't need it. And even though it's potentially very, very dangerous, I think. Anyway, Scottish John from Austin in Texas. How you doing, Scottish John? Scottish John says he'll send me the Texas variant by UPS because it's feckin' ginormous. Yeehaw, says Scottish John. These will be the conversations we will have in the future. On Zoom, because we won't be able to have them anywhere else. On Zoom, we'll be listing the various variants that we've had. What have you had? I've had the Texas variant there. I'm pretty sure I had the Ballymun variant. The Kent variant, I'm not too sure. I did have the South African variant. That would have been February last year. What about you there, Tig? Well, I had the South African variant. I know I didn't have the Kent variant, but it's a strong possibility, though doctors can't be sure, I might have had the Ballymun variant because Mickey O'Shea, who built me mother's wall, his sister's from Ballymun. We're not too sure, you see. That's how it's going to be. And by the way, when Piers Morgan said me mum had a bit of a reaction, Dr. Hillary was there to say, it's all okay, Piers. Nothing to see here. Perfectly normal. Like I said, we hope his mum is okay. If you want to find out about what's going on with reports coming in from around the world, reports of serious adverse events, go to vernoncoleman.com. When you're on vernoncoleman.com, click enter website. On the left-hand side, click health, and then you will see a lot of articles. He is updating every Friday, is Dr. Vernon Coleman. Reports coming in from around the world, genuine reports of very serious reactions. Helen Whateley is a Conservative Party MP, care minister as well. She was on GMB to talk about vaccinating people in care homes. Right? Piers Morgan didn't have the stones, nor did Susanna Reid, to ask her about Basingstoke either. The whole point of the segment was to deal with or talk about when we can get them all vaxxed and back seeing their relatives. Susanna Reid wanted to know, should vaccines be mandatory for those who work in care homes? And by Susanna Reid, of course, I mean the hopelessly inept Susanna Reid. Here she is with Helen Whateley.
Is there a point where you might insist that it is a condition of being in a care home that staff are vaccinated in order to protect everyone in that care home?
Well, at the moment, what we want to do is really support people to get vaccinated. So we want to make it as easy as possible so they can be vaccinated in the care home or go to a nearby hub or go to the GP to get vaccinated. Make sure they have the information about the vaccine, know that it's safe so your colleagues get vaccinated. We're supporting care providers to get their staff vaccinated to give information in turn.
But you're not going to make it mandatory.
The presenters are demanding that vaccines be made mandatory. They are. And they will become more insistent. I'll tell you more about it in a moment.
Well, I'd say at the moment, no, something I hear the most effective thing for care workers to be confident to get the vaccination is when they see colleagues getting it. So it's that word of mouth, it's seeing others do it. That's the thing that seems to be working best at the moment to give them the confidence.
Yeah, lead by example. If their colleagues get it, they'll follow them. If Johnny jumped into the river, would you jump in after him, would you? If Mary took a totally untested, totally untrialed, brand new experimental vaccine that was rushed out in a few months rather than 10 years, would you take it, would you? That might replace that old cliche when your mummy says, if Billy jumped off a cliff, would you follow him? If Billy took a stupid vaccine that he doesn't need, would you follow him, would you? You probably would, you bastard. Right. The Richie Allen Radio Show, 14 minutes past five on Monday, the 1st of February. Thank God January's gone. Thank God. How many jabs have been given to care home residents? Residents now, not staff, but the senior citizens residing in care homes. How many? Here's Jim Reid from the BBC with the statistics.
Looking across the UK, in Scotland, 94% of residents have now had their first jab and 80% of staff. Wales has now given a first dose to 74% of residents and 78% of staff. And in Northern Ireland, 80% of residents have now had both doses of a vaccine. But in England, there have been concerns about some care home workers. The government appears to have missed its target to offer a jab to all staff by the end of January.
Hmm. If they're doing well vaccinating the elderly, I wonder will they do so well in honestly announcing when sudden death occurs after said vaccination. We're going to have to wait and see, aren't we? I've been thinking about these vaccines, and a term keeps coming into my mind. It's probably nonsense. I am sometimes prone to abject nonsense. You know this. Of course, you do this job long enough, and ultimately, what the hell do I know, eh? I know very little about anything. But I've been thinking, a term keeps coming into my mind, and that term is planned obsolescence. You know what that is? Planned obsolescence is when you build something and you deliberately design it to fail, or you design it to have a certain lifespan. And I'm wondering about these vaccines. You know, we'll get some adverse events. Of course we will. And we're getting reports of deaths coming around from around the world, amazingly. But I wonder, is this the tip of the iceberg? You know, is this the beginning? If large-scale death is going to occur, will it occur 6 or 8 months or a year after the vaccine has been administered? And why am I thinking that? I'm thinking that because Professor Dolores Cahill said to me on this programme that for many, the initial aftermath of the vaccine will be quite normal, but later on, say a year and a half down the line, when exposed to a new strain of coronavirus, and you would be exposed to coronaviruses every year anyway, you might have an incredibly, incredibly bad illness and you might die. I've just been thinking of that planned obsolescence. Anyway, what does Boris Johnson think about the rollout of the jabs in care homes to the elderly?
We're very pleased that we've been able to give all elderly care home residents, virtually all elderly care home residents have now been given their first jab or a slot for their first jab. And that's very important for getting the spread of the virus down, getting the serious illness and the fatality down. We must make sure that we go forward with the second jab for everybody as well. A few have already had the second jab, as you know, but everybody will get one within 12 weeks of their first jab. And we're confident that we have the supplies to do that, and people are coming forward at exactly the right rate at the moment.
There you are. More claptrap from Johnson. We'll be watching this one carefully as well. On the deaths in the care homes in the UK and elsewhere, last week the collective health authorities of the European Union, of the UK and of Norway basically came together and said that which you would expect them to say. They said nothing to see here, nothing. They talked about, you know, people being in palliative care, people coming to the end of their lives. It's a coincidence, it's a coincidence, it's a coincidence if somebody gets a vaccine and passes away shortly afterwards. By the way, it's occurring to me that Piers Morgan did say that his mum had coronavirus last year. Yeah. Yeah, okay. And you know, tragically, and it is tragic, because they don't know any better, the sons and daughters of care home residents were on television and radio this morning to lament the fact that it's taken so long to vaccinate not only the care home residents, but also the care home staff. And I don't blame the sons and daughters of these residents. They haven't seen their parents. Sometimes, for many people, they haven't seen them for 6, 7, 8, 9 months, even a year. It must be terrible. Ruth Henshall told the BBC that her mother is dying of loneliness.
If we could take the rapid test, wear PPE, temperature checks, and the fact that they've had their first dose of the vaccine, we need to pass some kind of law that the same one that's in Canada that enshrines our rights as family carers to be able to, you know, for me to go in and be able to be with my mother. These people in homes are dying of loneliness. They are dying of isolation, and we have to weigh up the risk with the reward. You know, this is unacceptable and unbearable for the resident voice and for the families who can't get to see. It's a postcode lottery with the care homes. Some family is being allowed in to see their loved ones, and some of us aren't. One member of each family, one member, it has to be the same member behind a Perspex screen in my mother's home. I can't get to see her.
Yeah. I'm not going to add to that. It's 20 minutes past five. You're with the Richie Allen Show for Monday, February 1st, 2021. Always good to be with you. Tweet the programme. It's at BBG Richie. It's at BBG Richie. Paula says, Richie, I was thinking that today. What if the deaths started to appear in about 6 months or a year, says Paula. The perfect crime. It is, Paula, and I do seem to remember Dolores Cahill and others saying something similar. They might have said something similar in terms of it will be easy then to blame those deaths in 6 months or a year's time on a new strain of COVID-19. You see, today, South African variant, we better surge test 9,000 people by insisting that they test themselves and give us back the swabs. And then you have the Californian variant, as I said, I'm not going to do that bad gag again, don't worry. There will be more variants. And if the vaccine causes a severe adverse reactions in terms of it causes many deaths in 8, 9, 10 months, 12 months or 16 months time, no doubt it will be blamed on a virus itself rather than being blamed on the vaccine. I have no doubt in my mind you're absolutely right on that. At BBG Richie. At BBG Richie is the Twitter handle. Do stay in touch with this programme. It's richieallen.co.uk. On Twitter, I just told you what it is on Twitter, richieallen.co.uk. New articles posted there daily. New articles posted there daily. Yeah, and you can interact with those. You can join the website. There's a social tab as well at the top of the site where you can leave comments, and I kind of like it. So, and I'm glad that you seem to be using it as well. Back in a moment.
Renowned healer Mark Bajerski travels the world to find the most unique and powerful crystals for self-healing. Since the ancient times, crystals have been used as healing tools. They hold a natural healing vibration and are highly charged in positive energy. Mark teaches how to channel the universal energy and transfer it to the crystal to activate its healing power. Each crystal is used for its unique ability to target a different physical or emotional challenge. Mark Bajerski is an author, healer, speaker, and founder of the Pure Energy Healing Academy. He shares powerful messages of inspiration and healing on his daily YouTube videos, reaching millions worldwide. Mark's crystals, healing oils, and incense sticks are most sought after by other healers. His collection is available online at www.markbajerski.com. His work is presented through Lemon House, a company that creates and curates consciously made gifts.
Do follow my friend Jeanne Crowley on Facebook. She's on Facebook there. Follow Jeanne Crowley. She's always got something interesting to say, not just about coronavirus and COVID matters, but about things in general. Very bright woman, Jeanne Crowley on Facebook. Give her a follow there, why don't you? Alrighty, let's move on then. It's Monday's programme, and I'm pretty sure that Kevin Barrett will be standing by in Madison, Wisconsin. It is the BBG, not the BBC. Richie Allen, live in Salford. Drive time! And Dr. Vernon Coleman will be with me in hour two. You don't want to miss him either. Top man. Top man, top guest. Not a half-decent show at all. The real thing on the Richie Allen Radio Show. The real thing. We like real things. I like real things. You like real things. My first guest today is a real thing. Live from Madison, Wisconsin. TruthJihad.com. The author, broadcaster, academic, and all-round good guy. Is it? Pleasure to welcome back for the first time in 2021. Well, it should have been before now, really. Let's welcome back Kevin Barrett. Kevin, welcome back.
Yes, hello, Richie. Sorry about that. I think not
not at all. Thank God you're there. And we don't have to hear any more of Rod Stewart today.
Right. Oh, no, it's either me or Rod
Stewart. It's you or Rod, I know. It's a toss of a coin. I actually quite like Rod. Like I said, mate, welcome back. First time in 2021.
It's great to be back. That's my gravelly Rod Stewart voice.
Brilliant. That's a good impression of Rod Stewart there, Kevin. We'll get the tartan gear over to you now, the scarf and the hat and everything, and the kilt. Tell me this. It's only been a short time since Joe Biden was inaugurated as the President of the United States of America. What, the 46th, is it, Kevin, or the 47th? Correct me, which one is it? 46, maybe?
I don't know, maybe 46 and a half, because he's only about half there.
Yeah, that's lousy. But I understand why you said that. What sort of administration, what do you expect from Joe Biden? The enemies of Donald Trump, those of your fellow citizens who despised Donald Trump and everything about him, are thrilled to bits, cock-a-hoop, that he's been replaced. But in reality, what are they getting in Joe Biden?
Well, it's always more of the same, pretty much, isn't it? No president in the United States has really been allowed to seriously effect very much policy since, well, at least since the coup d'etat and the murder of President Kennedy in 1963. And those who have tried on issues that the deep state doesn't want them to mess with, like Nixon and Kissinger, who freelanced their way to a new relationship with China against the wishes of the Joint Chiefs and other power centers, get thrown out. You know, Watergate was another coup d'etat. And there's so many other examples of this. Jimmy Carter was thrown out after one term in a kind of coup d'etat, as Bush and William Casey engineered a deal with Iran to keep the hostages locked up and destroy Carter politically. And there's so many other examples of this. So presidents really don't have all that much power. And the reason Trump didn't accomplish much of anything in his 4 years is not so much that he's an idiot and a narcissist, although he is.
Yeah.
But even if he wasn't as president, he wouldn't accomplish much. And so I don't expect Biden really to do very much either.
Well said. Yeah, I think you and I have shared that opinion over the years. We've butted heads on plenty, but we see that it's two sides of the same coin, whatever Trump might have been. I think, is there any merit to what I believe, Kevin, that Trump was chosen to reignite people's passion for politics?
That's an interesting thought. Yes, but in a particular way. That is, I think Trump was basically a false flag operation against populism. The simplest kind of public relations smear job that you can do, or rather that the powers that be can do against anything that threatens them, is to take the message that threatens them and put it in the mouth of an unappealing spokesperson. They do this all the time. George W. Bush was busted for cocaine dealing, and that was confirmed by Karl Rove, by Bush's priest and others, and that information was then fed to Jim Hatfield, a man with a murder conviction. So Hatfield wrote the book, including that information, and then he was dragged on 60 Minutes and destroyed. And every other journalist then said, oh, we can't talk about Bush being busted for cocaine because, look, that evil Jim Hatfield broke the story. So that's how they do it. And with Trump, they found a narcissist, a psychopath, a moron, a lifelong kosher Nostra asset who was created by Roy Cohn. Trump was probably Roy Cohn's boy toy. You can see these pictures of Roy Cohn basically leading Trump around on a leash at Mardi Gras type Eyes Wide Shut events. Trump is a scumbag whose whole life was spent laundering money for the Kosher Nostra, the Meyer Lansky syndicate that then morphed into the Russian Jewish Israeli mafia that invaded the United States in the 1990s. And whose headquarters has always been the top floor of Trump Tower. That's who Trump is. And so he was put in office, I think, for two reasons. One, to give the extremist Zionists around Netanyahu everything they wanted, which he did through his handler and son-in-law Kushner. And then secondly, to smear populism, to make everybody who's not on board the Trump train think that populists are a bunch of narcissists, psychopaths, and so on. And so they've really skunked populism very effectively by using Trump as a symbol.
Using Trump. Certainly was as pro-Israel a president as you've probably ever had, or at least the most apparently pro-Israel president there's ever been. There's no doubt about that. There's no chance that the Biden administration will attempt to roll back on things like the embassy in Jerusalem. No chance, right?
I certainly don't think so. I think Trump was put in to grab these big gains for extremist Zionism, and they don't intend to relinquish them. And they have enough power over Biden that I think they'll probably convince Biden not to take the embassy out of occupied Jerusalem al-Quds, not to reverse some of these other policies. Whether Biden I don't know if he'll continue being as hostile to Iran as Trump was. That's somewhat unlikely because Biden was part of the Obama administration that negotiated the JCPOA. But aside from that, I think Biden will allow the Zionists to keep all of these ill-gotten gains that they got from Trump.
I said to Harry Vox on the program recently, and I'll ask you this question, and we'll leave it there for today on Israel, because I want to talk about Biden's woke agenda, which is very interesting to me, before talking a little bit about coronavirus. But have guys in the independent media over the years gotten too hung up on what the Israeli government does and how the Israeli government uses lobbyists around the world to, you know, to act on its behalf, to infiltrate political parties around the world? We get hung up on Israel doing that more than we get hung up on the fact that it's allowed to happen by people in the UK and the US. Why would we not just accept that Israel does what Israel does? It's not the only country that does that. And the real traitors are those in our countries who go along with it. I mean, I think back to an astonishing thing that happened here a couple of years ago when our Home Secretary now is Priti Patel, responsible for policing in the country, right? She's responsible for more, but policing in general. And when she was International Development Secretary, she took a holiday and went to Israel and spent time with Israeli government ministers and never told her own government here. You're probably aware of the story. And when she came back, she had to apologise for it. And I had people coming on this programme, you know, going on about the Zionists this and the Zionists that. Well, hang on a second. What are we blaming Zionists for? Zionists are just another group of people with their own agenda. Why don't we go after our own people? It seems like we give them a pass. What do you think?
Well, I think there's some truth to that, Richie. But on the other hand, if your country has been occupied by a brutal and genocidal enemy, you do need to blame that enemy as well as the traitors who are cooperating with that enemy. If you don't get people angry at the enemy that has invaded and occupied you and is committing genocide over in the occupied Holy Land, then how are you going to fight it?
Listen, I hear you loud and clear. I've spoken to many people, including Israelis, including arch Zionists, going back over the years, ultra Zionists. And I know what the Israeli agenda is, the Greater Israel Project. I'm well aware of it. And Israel has used the United States and it has used the United Kingdom and France to a lesser extent to help it engineer those policies. But I gave up blaming Israel for that a long time ago. It's wretched, it's rotten, it's apartheid, it's racist, it's all that and more. But I hate the Irish governments of the last 30, 40 years that have done nothing about it, only agreed with UN resolutions. I despise the English and the American governments who said, oh yeah, it's terrible. Like last week when somebody said, oh, they shouldn't keep settling, you know, but do something about it. I don't blame Israel for it. And I'm not trying to curry favour with Israel or anybody connected with it. I just think, you know, Israel is what Israel is. It's like today is Monday, you know. At what point do we, you know, stop blaming Zionists and start looking at ourselves? But anyway, look, we could be debating that all day long. I respect where you're coming from on that. Of course I do, and we'll no doubt discuss it again in the future. I'm fascinated by, I mean, Donald Trump, I don't disagree with anything you said about him. I feel sorry for the people who believed him. You know, when he said he was going to end overseas interference, when he said he would go after crooked Hillary. I mean, there's no more crooked human being on planet Earth than Hillary Clinton. And he didn't do any of that. And yet they supported Donald to the bitter end. I feel sorry for them. He wasn't all, I can't say he wasn't all bad, but he did some things that I liked. You know, he told schools not to allow trans girls, in other words, boys who identify as girls, play on girls' teams. And he also said they shouldn't use the facilities they feel like using. And he seemed to want to protect female-only spaces. Now, incredibly, Biden, I think within hours, Kevin, of being inaugurated, signed, what do you call him, an executive order, when he basically rolled all of that back. And I believe, and I'm no screaming Christian who gets uptight about everything, who gets hysterical, I'm not. But it seems to me like Joe Biden has put women in a position where they're far less safe now than they were before he was elected.
Yeah, I agree with you there. And I think that was there are a number of these areas where Trump was actually representing something that we would agree is good. But again, I think that that was intentional. In other words, they let this guy become president because he would make all of us who oppose this insane gender blending agenda or gender confusion agenda, they make us identified with Trump supporters who are cast as idiots and villains and so on. But yeah, I agree with you completely. It's just absolutely insane what they're doing around
it's
gender
mental,
these days.
Isn't it?
You know?
Yeah, sorry to interrupt you. You've got Rachel Levine, who might be a brilliant doctor. I'm sure Rachel Levine is a brilliant doctor. And has worked in Pennsylvania on coronavirus and is now the Assistant Secretary of Health, which is a very big position. He's also employed the first ever gay member of the cabinet. I have no problems with any of that if the people deserve to be there. I don't believe in positive discrimination. I don't believe in discrimination. If you're the best person for the job, I don't care who you identify as long as you do the job. But with Biden, it looks like there's something going on there. It really does. And I don't like this agenda. And, you know, Rachel Levine has talked about, you know, dealing with people for misgendering. Well, I'm sorry, if you ask me politely to call you she, because I'm a half-decent guy, I'll do that. But don't tell me I have to think that you're she. I mean, Rachel Levine is obviously a man who thinks he's a woman. This is crazy stuff, Kevin. When we first started talking many, many moons ago about false flag terrorism, about September the 11th, did you ever think that we would be talking about this stuff? Because I didn't see this coming.
No, I didn't either. And, you know, I have a kind of an unusual attitude towards this stuff. I think it's great to be tolerant of eccentric people,
yeah.
You know, weirdos. A lot of people think I'm a weirdo. So
yeah.
I could relate to that, you know, but I don't like people being bullied and persecuted. And so I'm all emotionally predisposed to actually defend these people to a certain extent. I lived in San Francisco for nearly 15 years. And from some of those years, I was living right in the heart of the Castro district and going to the only straight bar in the area. This was before I was Muslim, of course. It was called Dick's Bar, actually. And, the only straight hangout in the Castro. And so I saw all this stuff. I actually used to play racquetball at the Jewish Community Center over in Pacific Heights. And the guy who handed out the towels in the locker room, I learned, was a fellow named Jack Fertig, who dresses up as Sister Boom Boom, that is a nun, for these carnivalistic events in the San Francisco weirdo community. And at that time, I thought all of this was all very amusing, and it seemed pretty harmless. Now I've looked at what's happened to society over these couple of decades of my life, and now I think, there's a downside to this, especially normalizing it. Like this stuff, as far as I'm concerned, when it was a carnivalesque exception, and it happened in places like a certain neighborhood of San Francisco, and everybody kind of laughed and so on, but you could still be quote-unquote normal elsewhere, that was okay. But now they're forcing this as the norm, and
Kevin has just dropped out momentarily.
Normal.
You're back now. You just dropped out momentarily. You're in a very good point there, I think. We know that gay men and women make up a tiny percentage of society. We know that trans people make up a tiny percentage of society. And of course, they have every right, those people, to live and to prosper and to work and to thrive as much as everybody else. But it's never been a... Normal is a strange word these days. I don't know normal, but certainly it certainly wasn't common. And yeah, there is an agenda, I think, in the media particularly, to convince us that it is normal, or Jesus Christ, that it is common. And I wonder about that. And but we're seeing that creeping into primary school teaching here. Is that happening in Wisconsin by any chance? That sort of thing.
Yeah, the whole educational curriculum is now being built around this kind of stuff. I have sons in college, and they're now required to take a study course to graduate from college. And all of these courses are brainwashing people to basically jump on board with this entire agenda, that, you know, 100 different genders and men who think they're women should be allowed to totally destroy women in women's athletics, the whole nine yards. It's now you can't opt out of it. And then if you try to use critical thinking and evidence-based argument to disagree, then they'll probably flunk you out.
So isn't that funny?
It's really a terrible situation.
Andrew Pearce, who is a conservative commentator, and he wrote a brilliant piece for the Daily Mail a couple of years back. It was an outstanding piece. And as a gay man, he had to put up with a lot of crap in the 70s and in the 80s, particularly the early 80s. And he wrote very eloquently about having won the war. He said, gay and lesbian people have won the war. You know, we don't have to worry about going out now and getting our heads booted in because of the fact that we're in a same-sex relationship. Now, I'm not saying that I'm not saying that it doesn't happen. There will be an occasional case of somebody being attacked, but it certainly doesn't happen like it used to. He said, we've won the war, and he found it very strange and disturbing, this new agenda, seeking to impose a form of thought policing on people. You'll find a lot of gay and lesbian men and women over a certain age are pretty stunned by what they're seeing, and they don't like it at all, Kevin.
That's right. Yeah, I knew some people who identified as gay in San Francisco back in the day, and the ones I knew, there was a professor at San Francisco State where I went who was a friend of mine, and he'd been in a committed relationship with another guy for 10 or 20 years, and he was horrified by the kind of promiscuity and insanity that led to the AIDS epidemic. And I'm sure today he would probably be even more critical of this enforcing one mode of thought about this. And of course, I've come around now to a much more traditional religiously based approach to all of this, which is that I think the traditional religious restrictions on sexuality to a marriage, which is necessarily between a man and a woman, make a lot of sense. And there's a long, you know, argument in favor of that, which I won't necessarily jump into unless you want me to.
No, not today. But let me ask you this. Not today, but as a man of my word, I'm happy to get into that with you in a program in the near future. And I'm happy to bring on a lady who will debate with you. And she'll be brilliant in terms of that. She'll be respectful. And we can have some a good debate on that. No doubt about it. But let me ask you this. As a man who has always claimed to me, and I've had no reason to doubt you, as a man of peace, you can't agree with the men being flogged in Indonesia the other day. I saw the video. It's disgraceful. The two gay men were taken to a place, forced to kneel down, and flogged 70 times each because they're in a same-sex relationship. I'd hope, Kevin, that you would condemn that you would say that you wouldn't stand over that, you wouldn't endorse it.
Well, I don't know anything about it, so I can't comment at this point. But based on what you just said, it sounds unfortunate. However, I think that the traditional approach to sexuality that made sex acts outside of marriage actual crimes has something to be said for it. Claire Shaw of the British Isles has explained this in her argument for imposing a kind of a Sharia-based approach to this on everybody, even non-Muslims. She thinks it makes sense, and I think she may be a little extreme in her arguments, but I think those arguments are actually pretty well-founded.
As an agnostic man, I find it horrifying. Not you now, I could listen to you all day long. But the idea that a religious order or a government could impose upon me a set of rules and regulations around relationships, I find it utterly horrifying, to be honest. And I couldn't live under any such regime. You said it's unfortunate. I don't want to press you on it. I know you haven't seen it, but I'm telling you, it did happen. It isn't propaganda. Two poor lads were whipped 77 times in Indonesia because their neighbours reported them to Islamic religious police saying they're gay. I want to believe that my 10-year-old, 11-year-old pal, Kevin Bard, would not participate in something like that. You wouldn't.
Well, no, absolutely not. You shouldn't. They can't be convicted simply because their neighbor says they're gay.
They shouldn't be convicted, full stop.
If that happened, that is massively un-Islamic and totally wrong.
Good man. It's terrible. But anyway, it is what it is. Kevin, coronavirus. I had a tweet. I'm going to read it because you've got thicker skin than anybody I've ever known. It's from Jason. Jason makes me laugh, actually. It's so typical of things today. You know the way things are going today. People are getting so upset about everything. You read somebody for years and you like everything that he puts out, and then he says something you don't like. The way things are going at the moment, people will just abandon somebody they previously liked because they said one thing they don't like. Jason, big fan, or apparently a big reader of yours, but is not happy now. He says, Kevin is the most likable disinformation agent in the business, Kevin.
That's a nice thing to say.
He said, I was a regular listener and reader, but I stopped paying attention when it became clear that Kevin was pushing the corona bollocks please ask Kevin why he does this. He's saying this because I believe myself, Kevin, that there's an abundance of evidence in this country anyway that coronavirus is not serious. The death figures have been manipulated. The testing is utterly redundant. And that the whole pandemic is a scamdemic designed to bring totalitarianism into daylight. That's how I feel about it. If you see differently, thank God, my listeners will get to hear somebody with a different opinion. How do you see it, Kevin?
Well, I'm still trying to figure out what's really going on with this disease, Richie. The one thing that I think we know for sure is that the COVID-19 virus is a bioweapon that was created in order to achieve precisely the effects that we've seen. Now, what are those effects? Obviously, totalitarianism. That's one of the probably the main reason it was created. I also think it was unleashed in such a way as to implicate China and give the Western banksters who are trying to rule the world a weapon they could use against China. If we look at all of the evidence that this COVID-19 virus was around long before December of 2019, when it was first noticed in Wuhan, China, what we see is that it must have been unleashed elsewhere first, but then it was presumably sent to Wuhan by the U.S. military team that visited there for the Olympics in October 2019, or the military Olympics. And at that point, it was basically the whole idea was to have it detected. The Chinese have been repeatedly attacked with American biological weapons over the past two decades. And so they have a very well-developed surveillance apparatus. And so it was well known that they would catch it. And they did catch it. And then it got named the Wuhan virus. So they can use this to essentially, if China misbehaves too much, we have an excuse for World War III. All we have to do is claim that they made it and sent it after us. So that's, I think, where it came from. As far as to what extent is this bioweapon actually dangerous? Well, number one, remember that bioweapons are not meant to kill a lot of people. What you want to do if you unleash a bioweapon on your enemy is you want to force that enemy to spend a lot of resources trying to stop the virus and to taking care of that minority of people that are harmed by it. So it may be an even weaker bioweapon than they intended. I believe it was intended to further a depopulation agenda, and specifically to solve the biggest single problem facing the West economically, which is the inverted age pyramid. We're facing a situation where Western economies will completely collapse because instead of having many young people working and paying for a small number of retirees at the top of the pyramid, we have an inverted pyramid where by 2050 in Germany, there will be seven retirees for every working person. That's unsustainable. It can't happen. So I think they intentionally built a virus that was intended to take out old people. Now, the official statistics here in the United States say that we've lost a full year of life expectancy based on this virus. Is that true? I don't know. I haven't seen convincing evidence that it's true, nor have I seen convincing evidence that it's false. The official figures are 400,000 excess deaths. I've seen some attempts to overthrow that. I had people on my radio show talking about a study from Johns Hopkins that attempts to question that. But the late and so I provisionally accepted that. Maybe we didn't have 400,000 excess deaths, presumably because of COVID. However, the latest I'm hearing from those people who are working with Genevieve Briand on that issue, it suggests that actually there have been hundreds of thousands of excess deaths and that her argument may have been wrong. So I'm still trying to get to the truth of this. And I'm sorry that people can't handle that different point of view. But I think that if you follow my work and you look at the sources, you'll find that it's pretty well thought out, especially compared to most of what is going on.
You're keeping an open mind. You're keeping an open mind, which is what any journalist should do. Look, Jason is like a lot of people, not to criticize Jason at all. People are so sick and fed up of what's going on, and they're convinced that they're being lied to on a grand scale. That when they are, of course, but when they see somebody that they like and whom they've gotten a lot of information from appearing to say something a bit different, it can be a pain in the arse. But you have to be open-minded. What you said about Wuhan and the games and the US, Tony Gosling has said as much on this program. I'm wide open to all of that. Of course I am. I don't know anything. All I can say from the UK point of view is that we allegedly passed the 100,000 death milestone a couple of weeks ago. But the problem is that's very easy to debunk because of the useless PCR test, which I don't have to tell you about, and my audience is well aware of it now. Not to mention that we learned last year through Oxford University that people were being written off as having died of coronavirus, for example, if they tested positive in April, but then died of a stroke in July. It's so wrong, the counting of the death figures and all of that, and the hospitalisation figures, we know those are wrong, but it doesn't mean that you're not right. And what you said about it being a bioweapon that isn't as virulent as they wanted it to be, that's also a great possibility, Kevin. Where we will agree, you and I, is if that we don't wise up, people, we're going to be in a prison that there's no escape from. I mean, it's dreadful what they're talking about, Kevin. No travel without vaccines. I mean, Kevin, nobody's going to tell me, and I'm not a hard man, I'm not a tough guy, nobody's going to tell me that I have to have a vaccine. I'm not having that. If it means I can't go beyond the end of my street, well, so be it. You know, you've got to have a vaccine to travel. You've got to have a vaccine to go to the supermarket. You've got to carry a health passport with you. Be expected to be tested whenever the state tells you you need to be tested. No way, Kevin. I mean, that's where it's going, right?
Yes, and I agree with you 100% on that. Same here. I'm not getting vaccinated. It's just not going to happen. And if they try to force me or my loved ones to be vaccinated, I can't say what I'll do because I might have FBI people at my door.
Well, fair play to you. And you know, somebody said to me the other day, somebody who's well known in the independent media and is a nice person, I won't say he or she, and that person said, Richie, I was listening to you last week when you talked about could you be coerced into taking the vaccine? Could life become so unbearable that even the big mouth Richie Allen would take it? And I thought long and hard about it and said, no, even though I'm a really social animal and I like to be out and about, I wouldn't. But my contact in the independent media said that he or she couldn't answer definitively, you know, because of having elderly relatives and because of having neighbours and friends overseas and family overseas. They said it's too easy to be a tough guy and say, no, I wouldn't do it. I mean, my other half, Kevin, my better half, her family are in France. She wouldn't look me in the eye now and say, I'm not taking the vaccine. And if she decided to take it, I could hardly criticise her. I mean, if they said, if you don't take it, you're never going back to France, who could blame her, Kevin?
Yeah, I'm not going to try and condemn other people for their decisions.
Absolutely right. Can you give us any hope in the few minutes we have left? You are very active over there in Wisconsin. TruthJihad.com, folks, get on there. Very popular radio show. You speak to everybody. You're a great researcher with your academic background. Are you seeing anything, Kevin, that gives you any hope that people might at some stage stand up and say, no, we're going to take this on? Give us some optimism today.
Well, there's a mass awakening going on, obviously. That's why they've had to take these extraordinary measures, like running this Trump false flag to try to smear populism, as I mentioned, this wave of censorship of alternative media and perspectives. And you've been hammered by this probably more unjustly than anybody, Richie. They've really purged so much of the internet now of the truth-speaking voices. The reason for that is that they're freaking out because people are starting to wake up.
Yeah.
You know, people, to use the cinema metaphors, people are waking up and seeing they're in the Matrix. They're putting on those sunglasses from the film They Live. They're seeing what's really going on. And the powers that be are just absolutely freaking out. And so I think we need to look at the glass that's half full here and keep giving them more and more reason to freak out by finding better and better ways to share the truth.
Yeah, the censorship is a worrying thing because of the fact that we grew up online. The independent media grew online. That's where it was inevitably going to find the fertile ground. And it would appear now that we've kind of been kettled, I think. We've been kind of surrounded. So we're going to have to get a bit creative, Kevin, aren't we, in the next couple of years with how we do what we do. But anyway, great to have you on, mate. You know that. I hope you'll come back again in early March. Do give my regards to Rabia, of course, by the way, and to your boys. Always a pleasure, Kevin.
Likewise, Richie, and best to you and yours. I look forward to talking again.
Cheers, mate. The great Kevin Barrett, folks. TruthJihad.com. Love to have Kevin on. Great man, great guy. Can debate anything with him. No bother at all. I'm not getting it in the neck any more than anybody else. I'm in the firing line lately, but never... never associate that level of attack with me. It's not about me. I'm not important. But the programme is coming in for some flack. I plan on writing a fairly detailed mini essay on the website about what's going on and about some of the people involved. But that might take a week or two. I have no problem with that. I'll take my time. I'll bide my time. I'll bide my time, Smithers. What it is there is an agenda to try and scare off people from speaking to programmes like this. To scare them off. You know, there might be an academic out there like Dolores Cahill, you know, like Andy Kaufman. He's not so much an academic. Like Carl Hennigan. And they might think, well, nobody else will talk to me, so I'll talk to the Richie Allen Show, because he's got a half-decent audience. And that's what the establishment doesn't want. They want to scare them off coming on this programme by throwing mud at the programme because of the guests I've had on in the past, including Kevin Barrett, who's had a lot to say about Israel over the years and the Zionist lobby in the United States. It doesn't bother me at all. I've had a lot of emails from people saying, I'm worried about you, Richie, and it must be tough. It isn't tough. I couldn't give an arse. I genuinely couldn't. My pulse doesn't get above 60 at the best of times. I'm used to it. It doesn't bother me at all. It mildly angers me because I would hope that academics and doctors would have more sense to believe that garbage and that they would be mature enough to make their own minds up about which platforms they appear on. That's the only thing that would mildly annoy me. But sure, look, what are you going to do? Rhythm of My Heart, Rod Stewart. I wrongly cut it short earlier on. There was no need for it. We could have kept Kevin hanging on the other end of the line, couldn't we? Here he is, Rod Stewart. This is one of my favourite Rod songs. I've got the album this came from, but I can't remember the name of the album. Not a bad album at all. Dr. Vernon Coleman in a few minutes' time. I can't wait to hear The Doc. Rod Stewart on the Richie Allen Radio Show. It's exactly 4 minutes past 6 o'clock. Monday's programme, the 1st of February 2021. Wasn't that a lovely video today that I watched? I watched this lovely video of an ITV, ITN I think it was, a report filed back in 1981 when the great Dr. Vernon Coleman was told by the Department of Health and Social Security, you are to put down on somebody's medical certificate exactly what is wrong with them. Tell their employer. Dr. Vernon Coleman said, we'll see about that. And didn't do it. Stood up for the little guy. Amazing. Great video, that. Put an article on richieallen.co.uk about it. And he resigned on a point of principle back then. Ah, that's what doctors used to be like. Dr. Vernon Coleman is on the other end of the line. Welcome back.
Ricciardo, I'm going to ring you back. The line is
bit of an echo.
Hand washing on it. I'll ring you straight back.
No bother. Bit of an echo on the line there. We'll just ixnay the old phone there after that big build up as well. Did you read the article? It's richieallen.co.uk, and it's just a little bit about Vernon and how I came to know him. I was sent a clip of that ITN report from 1981, and he's got a tremendous head of hair in the video. So you do. Welcome back. It's a wonderful clip, that, isn't it?
It's a wonderful head of hair, and I can understand why you're totally jealous. I do understand.
Dear listener, he looks like Stanley Bowles there from QPR days and Rodney Marsh. No, it's a great clip, and I suppose listeners to this programme who knew you anyway, maybe one or two who didn't, it's a nice bit of backstory on what you've been getting up to over the years and the things that you've been interested in. So, 40 years ago nearly. Well, 40 years ago, you could say almost to the day, Dr. Vernon Coleman. Lot going on. I like to give you this hour because we do this because the government says a lot about coronavirus on a daily basis. There are doctors and scientists like you who disagree with them, but you get no airtime on the BBC, on Sky or on ITV. So it's your chance, basically, to take on what the government says. So you kick off wherever you want to kick off. I know deaths in care homes, we can talk about that, but I know that adverse events in general is becoming a bigger story. You're documenting this on VernonColeman.com.
Absolutely. But before we get to that, and I've got a ton of stuff about that, I hear you've been having a little media trouble, Richie.
Just a little bit.
A little organization called Hate to Hope or Hope to Hate or something like that, I don't know. Now, you and I are mates, and I don't like my mates going being done over, so I thought I'd have a little look to see what's going on. Did they do your wiki as well?
Wikipedia. They have been playing around. Now, I can't be 100% it is them, but somebody keeps changing the Wikipedia to make it look like I'm sort of some sort of racist platformer, which I'm not, of course.
No, of course. They work mine over. I did a video about it. Larry Sanger, co-founder of Wikipedia, uses CIA and Wikipedia in the same paragraph without any embarrassment. These pressure groups, they're ruthless. They don't seem to me to care who gets hurt. They don't much like debate, I don't think. They want to discredit people. And anti-Semitism is a standard excuse, a good old-fashioned way to demonize somebody. Now, this is really odd as well, that they had a go at you with this for absolutely no reason, because what they seem to have done is accused you of this on the basis that you interviewed somebody who might be accused of that. Well, the BBC interview an awful lot of people, including David Irving and co, who have aroused a great deal of questioning. And a little aside here, because I'm going to have a little discussion about Hope Not Hate, or whatever they're called. I'd never heard of them until a couple of days ago. A little aside, I've got books in 25 languages, including Hebrew. I've never been in the slightest bit anti-Semitic. Anyone, whether it's this lot or anybody else, who accuses me of anything nasty, which I think affects my earning power, gets sued. The libel law in the UK is quite simple. If anything affects your finances, you can sue. And since I've got books in just about every language, I've got a lot of possibilities. I once sued a chief constable over a cancelled animal rights demo. So that's just a friendly warning to start you off with. They were after you, Richie. It was nothing to do with Semitism and the guy you interviewed, in my view. I'll explain some background in a minute. But they did it, I believe, to destroy two heroes with one stone. Desmond Swain, brave and honest MP, spoke the truth, so he needed discrediting and silencing. And they did it to hurt you, depress you, upset you. And these things always do, however long you've been in the business. Sorry. And they did it to, I believe, to frighten people off your show. Well, I'll be honored to be here as long as you'll invite me. Your problem is you've become very influential, and so they're worried about you. And this is all part, in my view, part of government's concerted military psyop to force us all to think the same, to create fear, to destroy those who dare to question the official policy, to suppress debate, demonization on an industrial scale, silence anybody who is off message with the mainstream media, protect Agenda 21 and communitarianism, for which you can read communism, of course, and to keep COVID-19 fraud going well. And just a summary of the lies and conspiracy about COVID-19. March the 20th, government's advisors said it was in the same bracket as flu. People forget that. That's crucial, because that means that everything after that, the government knew they were lying. PCR tests, as we know, false. Lockdowns, dangerous. Even the WHO says that. Masks proved to be dangerous, do far more harm than good. And incidentally, Colonel Tom, I can't remember what rank he is now, the poor chap, I wish him well. I believe he's got pneumonia. I bet you they claim it's COVID. The social distancing, the number of deaths they've lied about the NHS being busy, and they have lied and lied and lied and said that the vaccine is safe and effective. All of that is provable, and I'll debate any all of those issues with any government advisor, Valance, Whitty, or even Matt Hancock if he's got the balls. Now, let's get back to this little organisation. I always start by looking at the accounts, which is very interesting, because this Hope Not Hate, or whatever they're called.
Hope Not Hate. Hope Not Hate, yeah. That's the one.
They have an income last up to the December 2019 of over £1 million. And you'll never believe, I was amazed. They've got 15 employees, operates in England and Wales, and some of their money, big chunk of money, Tory government. Now, isn't that surprising? I was amazed, because this seemed to me to be a little left-leaning, you might say. But they've got money, big chunk of money, from a Tory government. So the government says, maybe the government's lying. But what I want to know is how much did they ever get any money from a Gates Foundation or from the EU?
Wow.
Or from any drug companies? And I'll explain why that's relevant in a minute. I think they should publish a list of every donor who's given them more than 20 quid. That would be the right and decent thing to do. These people hate Brexit, and they seem to support vaccination. Now, that is really odd, because they claim to be campaigning for people who are poor and campaigning against extremism. So why would you want to oppose Brexit, which is what the British people voted for? And why would you want to vote for the COVID fraud, which has led to hundreds of millions of Africans are probably going to die, well, are going to die? The United Nations say their children are dying of starvation in their millions because of the lockdowns. It's a complicated story, but that's what's happening. Even the UN admits that. It seems like a typical lefty, lovey, globalist, weaponized pressure group, and you've got mixed up in it, I'm afraid. They did Desmond Swain because he appeared on your show. They did you, Richie, to stop people coming on your show. Now, the other interesting thing is that the Charities Commission, it's a charity. It's a company and a charity.
The charity,
and
yeah.
The Charities Commission, which is a government department, as you know, has reprimanded charities for doing anything that's overtly political. And they actually reprimanded a group that published a study on Brexit. But this Hope Hate group, they had a big chunk of money from Joseph Rowntree, which has been campaigning against, and they've been campaigning against Brexit. And the Hope to Hate lot, they worked with Gina Miller's group, and they supported the EU and opposed Brexit, which means they must love bureaucracy, communitarianism, global warming, cult, sustained development, Agenda 21, and all that crap. And they, or at least it seems that they would to me, and they even suggested regional assemblies. Ye gods, Tony Blair and Prescott tried that years ago.
And Gordon Brown. Gordon Brown has been calling for regional assemblies as early or as recent as last week. Just to be the devil's advocate here, Hope Not Hate would say the reason we oppose Brexit is because we genuinely believe that Brexit, the arguments that were had before the actual vote in June 2016, the arguments themselves were xenophobic. They would say Nigel Farage's famous image on the bus of all the migrants coming. They would say that we're an anti-racist group and we believe that the Brexit argument became a racist one. That's what they might say.
Well, they might say that, but the Charities Commission, I think they should be reported to the Charities Commission, because they investigated Brexit Party candidates. I don't think there's any evidence that they haven't said they investigated other candidates. It's very good of you to be very fair of them, but I'd expect you to. And I want to look at these people because I can be a bit more cold-blooded, but you're being very generous to them. A charity can only carry out political activity, says the Charities Commission, to support delivery of its political purposes. Now, Brexit was voted for very much by people who would normally be described as poorer people.
Yeah.
What the hell are these people doing, spending energy and presumably money fighting against Brexit? Aren't there other things which they need to be looking at?
I agree with you 100%. 100%. I voted for Brexit, the last election I ever voted in. I hadn't voted for 20 years before that, because I won't vote for puppet politicians. I might have voted for Desmond Swain, but I voted for Brexit not because I'm a xenophobe, but because I'm an old trade unionist, and I know that allowing people come into the country from Eastern Europe, from anywhere, is putting pressure on semi-skilled and lower-skilled men and women because the jobs become too competitive. That's why I would have voted, not because of any racism. Absolutely.
Absolutely. The next point about this group is that they do seem opposed to vaccination. Now, there was an article in issue 42 of their magazine which described a very small number of people who they described as anti-vaxxers. And here's a quote. At a time when there is likely, this is a quote from a magazine which is on the website, this hate group. At a time when there is likely to be a huge interest in and opposition to the upcoming COVID-19 vaccine, it is vital to understand how such efforts run the risk not only of hindering effects, efforts to defeat the pandemic, but also of causing considerable harm to social cohesion and safety by acting as a gateway to other dangerous conspiracy-orientated belief systems.
Yeah.
What on earth? How did they get there? This was written by a guy who's got a little cartoon dog on his Twitter, bless his little heart. And he's allegedly a researcher with this group. And on his Twitter, whatever I don't know what you call these things, he's got one of David Lammy. And Lammy, according to this bloke from Hope, whatever, he says, quote, vaccines work, are safe, and will save lives.
Wow.
Now we're beginning to see why I think they targeted you, Richie. You've been anti-vaccine and exposing, some of it my fault, I agree, exposing the whole COVID-19 thing. Let's remember, this is Lammy who is telling people the vaccine's safe and effective. This is the Lammy who, when he was asked the married name of scientists Marie and Pierre, who won the Nobel Prize for their research on radiation, he came up with Marie Antoinette.
That's right.
To defend the gates of Paris was later used as a prison by Cardinal Richelieu, and he answered Versailles. This is a guy who was in the minister. He was a minister in the Labour government. He was asked who succeeded to the English throne after the death of Henry VIII, and he said Henry VII.
He didn't, did he? Really?
Henry VIII.
Wow.
Succeeded Henry VII. He can't even add up.
I wouldn't have known. I wouldn't have known. I would have got the first two. The third one, I would have just guessed for the crack. Henry IX. I wouldn't have known. Not being an Englishman. But can I just say, can I just say on Lammy? Lammy is, I'm incredulous that we're talking about Lammy. Well done for bringing him up. I wish some of these people had the courage to come on programmes like this because they would be treated very fairly. They would be treated with the same courtesy that I treat you. But Lammy astonished me last week because he advocated in these desperate coronavirus times that we reduce jury numbers to 7. To cope with the backload of cases. Jesus, Mary and Holy Saint Joseph. It's difficult enough to get a fair trial in England as it is without reducing the juries to 7. That's the dumbest thing anybody has said this year. That's not about coronavirus.
He does specialise in dumb stuff. I've got to tell you this one. Do you remember this one? I'm sure. He once criticised the BBC for saying that the smoke coming from the Vatican would be either black or white. And he criticised because he thought it was racist.
Did he really?
Yeah. And he I mean, he doesn't even seem
you're
to
such
know
a, the reason I say did he really is because you're such a renowned mickey taker and with your dry sense of humour. I wonder if you pull on my leg sometimes. Did he really say that?
He really said that. He really said there's another one from this hate. I can't remember that bloody name.
Hope Not Hate. I better say it or I'm going to get sued. Hope Not Hate. They're a charity. And can I just do this for 20 seconds? The background to this is, over the years I've had some very unusual, sometimes very eccentric people on my programme. Some of them, I think probably 3 tops, but I think it's 2, have said the Holocaust never happened. On each occasion I vehemently disagreed with them. I pointed out that I've been to Dachau myself, and I talked about friends of mine like Norman Finkelstein, whose aunt and his family were at Auschwitz. I don't agree with that. However, back in 2016, 5 years to the day, I interviewed an old chum of mine called Nick Collerstrom, and it wasn't my best moment. It was a clumsy interview. While I totally disagreed with Nick when he said that people weren't gassed, I totally disagreed with him. I said to him that I wasn't convinced of the number 6 million, and I clumsily said something along the lines of, there's a big lie somewhere. I didn't mean that the 6 million is a big lie, because it might be 6 million, might be 5 million. I was actually thinking about the stories that were told about the skins of prisoners being turned into lampshades and soap. I don't like the state of Israel. I don't like the people who created it. I'm very critical of them. That's the only time my language has ever been clumsy. My friends are Jewish. My accountants are Jewish. They know this and they had no problem with it at all. But they tend to look at that particular interview as some evidence that I promote Holocaust denial, even if I'm not guilty of it myself, which I'm not. But I don't promote it either. I don't agree with the bastard thing, but it doesn't matter. They have been at me now, hope not hate, for the best part of about 3 years. And it's come to a crescendo this weekend because Desmond Swain came on the programme. And Desmond Swain is supposed to be a clairvoyant. He's supposed to be Colin Fry and, I don't know, Nostradamus all mixed up into one. He's supposed to know everything about every guest that ever came on this programme. And he's supposed to absent himself from the programme because I've had some unsalubrious characters on in the past. This is madness. And Dr. Mm-hmm. Vernon, you've been doing a much better job of explaining this than I have. This is who Hope Not Hate are. They're a bunch of cowards who won't face me publicly or anybody else. Sorry, go ahead.
It is called the Richie Allen Show, after all.
Yeah, but they hear enough of my bull spit most of the time. They're here to hear you, Vernon, so go ahead.
The other interesting thing is there's a guy called Nick Lowles, or Lowles, who worked for this lot. Now, the reason I'm saying all this is because I think a lot of this is my view, but I think a lot of this is tied up with vaccines, and I think it's tied up with the fact that there is government money involved. And I want to know, does this bunch get any money from Bill Gates? Because if they don't, they're probably the only lot involved in this who don't. Yeah. Or do they get any money from anyone else, any other little bands who are throwing cash about? Anyway, Lowles retweeted, is that what they say? Retweeted,
yes. He amplified somebody else's tweet.
Yeah, well, it said, quote, pay no attention to those peddling vaccine disinformation, close quotes. Now, I take grave exception to that because not only have one of them quoted Lammy, admittedly it wasn't an official Hope whatever, it was one of the people working there who quoted Lammy as saying the vaccine was safe. Lammy says the vaccine's safe, well, that's all right. But this guy quotes this little thing, gets 35, I actually managed to look at it, he got 35 little hearty things, whatever the hell they mean, for saying that pay no attention to those peddling vaccine disinformation. I'll come back to that in a minute, and I hope they feel very embarrassed.
It might be his opinion now, to be the fair devil's advocate. I'm not just saying this. This is not a double act, Vernon and me. I mean this. Just to be balanced about it. Maybe Nick Lowles, this chap, maybe he genuinely believes in the vaccine. Maybe he thinks that people not getting the vaccine puts everybody else at risk. He might believe that, for all we know.
And if he believes that, he hasn't done his research properly and he shouldn't be advocating something that he doesn't know anything about. Because he doesn't know anything about the vaccine. If he believes it's safe and effective, at least I don't believe he knows anything about the vaccine, if he believes it's safe and effective. And I'll come back to that in a minute with some stuff that has astonished even me. The fact is that the COVID fraud, I started off calling it a hoax in March last year. I should have called it a fraud. Flu, let me remind you, affects 1 billion people a year. Far, far more than COVID's affected. 3 to 5 million are severely affected, and up to 650,000 die of flu in a flu year, which is in the Northern Hemisphere, October to May. Now, what they're doing with this COVID-19 is they're keeping a running total. If they keep it going for another 10 years, the entire British population in numbers will have died of it. It's madness. Nobody has ever done this before, to just keep a running total. The total comparable COVID deaths, I believe, is less than the flu. And I would be happy to debate that with Hancock, Whitty, Valance, if they've got the balls. Because flu has, of course, disappeared magically. And the total, the 100,000, I think it is, that they're talking about now, largely consists, in my view, as a doctor who has spent months studying this, largely consists of lockdown deaths, which are being added to the COVID vaccine deaths.
Are they really, Vernon? Are they adding lockdown deaths? These are people now who died because of lockdown, maybe suicide, maybe, I don't know, maybe neglect, whatever. Are they really adding those stats to COVID stats?
Well, they are, because anybody who dies within 28 days
right.
of a positive test is a COVID death. But a huge chunk of that 100,000, in my view, consists of some flu deaths. Because, and just a quick aside, I understand that a lot of people say that this isn't the COVID-19 vaccine isn't a vaccine. I understand and I agree with that. But for the sake of simplicity and for not confusing me or anybody else, I still call it a vaccine when I'm on your program or when I'm writing about it. So that's one thing. The other thing is that I know it's not the same sort of virus. It's a coronavirus. It's not the same as the flu. But as far as I'm concerned, in numbers, it's taken over from the flu. It's pushed it aside. The flu, according to the World Health Organization, has more or less disappeared. Now, I know some people, as I say, don't call it a vaccine, but for the sake of argument, just stick with me. Now, the Public Health England, which has, let us remember, received millions of dollars, whatever, I think it was dollars, from the Bill and Melinda Gates, whatever, and the Medicines and Health Regulatory Agency, which had just under $1 million from Gates. What the hell are our agencies, these people getting money from Gates? Well, a stupid question, I suppose.
Yeah.
Now, both these, Public Health England and Medical and Medicine and Health Regulatory, they both say that the vaccine deaths, the deaths after receiving the vaccine, are all coincidental. Remembering, of course, that Bill Gates is a major shareholder in vaccine companies. Now, if you the death after injury thing is very interesting, because what they're saying is you have the vaccine, and if you die after it, the two are not connected. They're also saying, of course, that if you have COVID-19 and you die, and previously it was 60 days, and you die within 28 days, then it's caused by the COVID-19, even if you got hit by a bus or hit over the head with a brick or whatever. Now, this death after injury thing is very interesting because it's not up to them. It's not up to the Public Health England, Bill Gates, or all these people, or even David Lammy, bless his cotton socks, to decide whether something has been caused by something else or not. That's what a coroner exists for in the days when they used to have coroners. But in America, for example, a medical examiner in America decided that a death of a guy who was stabbed 50 years before the death was connected. 1982, do you remember James Brady was shot by Hinckley when he tried to assassinate Ronald Reagan?
Yeah.
Well, he died, James Brady died in 2014. So what's that? 18 and 14, 32. Or
32, yeah.
That was decreed that the death was homicide, because he had been shot 32 years earlier. The point I'm making is that you can't just say that just because somebody died 6 days after a COVID vaccine, you cannot say it's unrelated. In practical terms, of course it was related. And the fact that there's been an epidemic of vaccine deaths, which again I'll come on to in a minute, the fact that there's been an absolute epidemic of vaccine deaths makes you think, or it should make anybody think, if these aren't connected, what the devil is going on? Now, let me tell you something else, which I've been working on for a day or two, which it just came to me this afternoon. And I wish the Hope and whatever people would look at this, and I hope they do, and I hope they feel mortally embarrassed, because what I'm going to say may well shock you. It shocks me that this is true. The vaccine is a trial. It's a study. It's an experiment. I can prove that because if you look at clinicaltrials.gov in the US National Library of Medicine, they have a report headed Study to Describe the Safety, Tolerability, Immunogenicity and Efficacy of RNA Vaccine Candidates Against COVID-19 in Healthy Individuals. And what they say is that this study is a two-year trial, right? It's going to continue until 2023. And the MHRA, the Medicines Regulatory Load of Rubbish in the UK, have also got an extensive trial going on because they put in a purchase order. I don't think they actually told anybody this, but I've seen the purchase order. They put in the request for an app to try to follow what was happening. Now, this is all very significant because if you look at the Nuremberg Code on Medical Experimentation, which was written in 1947 for obvious reasons, it states that explicit voluntary consent from patients is required for human experimentation.
Yeah.
That means fully informed consent. In other words, anybody who takes part in a study, an experiment, has to be told what's happening and their permission has to be obtained. Otherwise, it's a breach of the Nuremberg Code on Medical Experimentation.
This is astonishing, isn't it? This is proper astonishing. And what you said about the MHRA, that's vital that people understand that. It has attempted to develop an app that would help it cope with the expected surge of adverse effect reporting. And that's proof that the MHRA accepts and acknowledges that this is a trial. That's brilliant. That's brilliant.
Absolutely. Now, war criminals never think they're war criminals. Most of the people I've studied, because I wrote a couple of books about it, the Second World War and the way it links into the European Union, which, incidentally, the anti-Brexit people really ought to know about, because if they don't know about that, what the hell are they doing supporting the EU? The fact is that war criminals never think they're war criminals. They've always got an excuse. And I'm going to say this slowly, so make sure that I know what I'm saying. Everyone, doctor, nurse, whatever, everyone giving this COVID-19 vaccine, whichever one, to a patient without explaining that it is an experiment and without listing all the possible adverse events is a war criminal. They have to be, because we've established it's a trial. We've established it's an experiment. It's an experimental vaccine. We've established what the Nuremberg Code on Medical Experimentation is, and therefore anyone who is giving this vaccine without telling the patient you are taking part in an experiment and the list of side effects, the possible list of adverse effects which you could suffer is as follows, because that's the only way you can get informed consent. If they're not doing all that, they're war criminals. And at the end of this war, there are going to be a lot of doctors and nurses, and I don't know who else they've got giving the vaccine. They seem to be training anybody and everybody to give it, although GPs who were retired were going to have to go through a long and complicated internet procedure in order to be evaluated on whether or not they could give a vaccine, for heaven's sakes. The fact is that whoever you are, if you are giving this vaccine and you are not telling every single patient separately, you are taking part in a trial. Are you happy about that? And then reciting to them the list of side effects, which would take you probably 10 minutes to recite, I have to say. If you don't do that, then I don't see how you can possibly argue that you're not a war criminal.
And the vaccine itself came into being in about 5 or 6 months. So although everything you said is vital information and is important, well, it's beyond important, I'm even stunned that people are happy to take something that came into being in 5 or 6 months. That being said now, reports emerged out of the United States overnight that more than half of people surveyed are likely to wait and see, to take a wait and see approach with the vaccine, not to have it, and to see what happens to others who do take it. And a smaller number have said they won't have it at all. But you're right, I can't... It's astonishing to hear this. It's still a trial that's going on till 2023. We're guinea pigs. We're observing and documenting how people react to this vaccine while telling them that it's been passed and it's been scrutinised. It's fine and dandy. Don't worry about it. You can have it. It's monstrous. I can't think of another word.
With the Archbishop of Canterbury, David Lammy, and a bunch of collected celebrities, some of whom, it has to be said, have been receiving money. I don't think the Archbishop of Canterbury or David Lammy accepted money or were offered money for a second, but some of the influencers, as they, I think they're called, took money in order to promote the vaccine. What does David Lammy know about this vaccine? I want to ask him, come on, you're out there telling people to take it because it's safe and effective. How do you know it's safe and effective? Because the government, a government of proven liars, has said that it's safe and effective. They've created, they use PSYOP, they use military PSYOPs to try to make people frightened. Deliberately, how can we make, I've seen the papers, how can we make people more afraid?
Yeah.
That's why people are taking it. That's why I'm so furious with this pathetic little organisation.
And more acquiescent. Why those papers talked about how to make people more acquiescent. We're going to come on to the death in care homes. I certainly don't want to be interrupting you, but I've got to do this. I've got to remind our listeners, if you've just joined the programme, it's the first time you've ever heard this show, you're listening to Dr. Vernon Coleman, an esteemed best-selling author and one-time general practitioner. VernonColeman.com is the website. Brand New Tube is where you'll find episodes of An Old Man in a Chair. And Vernon's e-books are on his website, but his website is a maze. Much as I love the man, I'm not giving him any credit for his website. We need to bring that kicking and screaming into the 21st century. But go and find free ebooks on his website. But if you can't find them, go to richieallen.co.uk/Vernon-Coleman. richieallen.co.uk/Vernon-Coleman. And there are two ebooks on there generously donated by the one and only Dr. Vernon Coleman. That is COVID-19, the greatest hoax in history, and proof that face masks do more harm than good. They're free and they are packed with references to support the points of view, to support his theses. Read those books and share them with other people. I didn't want to be interrupting you, but I wanted to do that before you start talking about Basingstoke and 22 deaths out of 65 residents. Now, you might have something else to say before you say that, because I might have cut you off in your prime there. But I can't get my head around this Basingstoke story. And I've done my level best to find out whether those residents had dose one of Pfizer-BioNTech, but they're not talking to anybody.
They had the vaccine.
Did they?
I believe they had the vaccine, yeah. But the medicines agency, with its Bill Gates money sloshing around in its bank account, said that it's a coincidence. Anybody who dies after the vaccine, it's a coincidence. If you die within 28 days of having a positive PCR test, that every doctor in the country with an IQ bigger than his shoe size must know is a load of rubbish. Every doctor, nurse, anybody must know that the PCR test, they're using a cycle of 40, I don't know, sometimes 45. The World Health Organization says that's far too high. You're just picking up all sorts of bits of rubbish. It's an astonishing thing. But those, if you die within 28 days of having a fake PCR test, then you are a COVID-19 patient. But if you die within a day of receiving a vaccine, it's just a coincidence because you weren't very well and it's your fault. So, because don't forget, nobody can sue over this. Bill Gates insisted that the drug companies and everybody else be given total legal immunity. You can't sue anybody, even if the vaccine kills millions of people, which I now believe it may well. You can see why I get so cross with organizations who have these people. They build a following, and their people then send out or accept and acknowledge the idea. And I read out that that stuff from the Hate Hope People's website and magazine, in which they said they attacked anti-vaxxers. When they attacked anti-vaxxers, do you know how many doctors they mentioned? None.
Zero.
There are thousands of doctors in the world who have spoken up against the vaccine and against the fraud, the hoax. A lot of them have been struck off. There were two more in Belgium struck off the other day. A lot of doctors have been struck off and lost their jobs, lost their licenses, because they've dared to speak out about the lies and the cheating and the fraud that's going on. And there are things about this whole shenanigans that I find so difficult to accept. Valance, as I said on your show yonks ago now, he's got, at least he used to have, heaven knows what they're worth now, but he used to have, I think it was 600,000 quid's worth of shares in GSK, a vaccine manufacturer, and he's Britain's chief scientific officer. Wheaty used to work for an organisation which got Gates money.
Yeah.
Ferguson works at Imperial College. Gates money. Everywhere you look, there's Gates money.
Yeah, well, 26 of the SAGE members, nearly all of them, have benefited, their departments at their various universities have benefited from money from the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation and the proxies, Gavi and Seppi, they have. And, you know, somebody like you, I mean, you're obviously a very experienced researcher because you've written so many books, you've got to know how to research. But you don't even have to be Dr. Vernon Coleman to find out these things. It takes about 5 minutes using a computer to make these connections, doesn't it? It's so obvious with Gates and the donations. It's ridiculous. If you put any university in Western Europe into a search engine, anyone, take one from Italy, take one from Austria, and put Gates' name in, it is a hilarious game to play. Because within seconds, you'll find some department that got some money. It's just, it's that easy.
Yeah, it just gives it out all over the place.
Yeah.
And as you say, it takes you about less than a minute. I would like the Hope to Hate organisation to, I would like to see them publish a list of all their donors. We're entitled to know. They're a charity. They have, according to the British government, they have received taxpayers' money. Who else's money have they had? What are they? Do they really believe the vaccine is a wonderful thing and that anti-vaxxers are dangerous and trying to break down society? Why are all anti-vaxxers? Why have we all become discredited? Why have we all become far-right, dangerous lunatics? You're not far-right. I'm not far-right.
No.
I don't think I'm right at all.
You're also not an anti-vaxxer. This has become a term that's become, it's almost become akin to anti-Semite. You're obviously not an anti-vaxxer. You've talked to me over, during the time we've spoken, about how vaccines have worked, about how they could work. It's vaccines in recent years. It's adding too many to the schedule and the ingredients. That's not anti-vaxxer. That's being a proper doctor. There's nothing anti-vax about that.
Exactly. But the only doctor, every other doctor in the UK that I know of that's spoken out, has been struck off.
Yeah.
Just not spoken out, really, just questioned it and said, hey, hang on a minute, are we perhaps giving too many? There was a paper, you know about it, I mentioned it before, there was a paper in the British Medical Journal pointing out that during the lockdowns there were far less infant deaths, and quietly saying, the writers of it quietly said, I don't suppose this could be anything to do with vaccines not being given because of the lockdown. But it less children dying, maybe because they weren't getting their vaccinations. Well, what the hell else could it be? But can we look at this? No way. We can't look at it. They don't test vaccines to see whether they're safe with other vaccines. They don't test vaccines to see whether they're safe with all the other drugs that people are taking. Most people over 80, I would guess, are taking at least one or two prescription drugs. Do they test these vaccines, these brand new vaccines in inverted commas, because we all know they're not really, they actually change your cells. Are they doing anything to find out whether these so-called vaccines are safe with chemotherapy, with heart treatments, with high blood pressure treatments. No, they're not doing anything.
Now, if Dr. Hillary, hang on, if Dr. Hillary Jones from ITV was here, he would say to you, Vernon, because he'd bound to be disrespectful, he wouldn't be respectful. He might say, Vernon. I'd stop him and I'd say, it's Dr. Vernon to you, Jones. But then he would say, look, we don't test anything against fertility, whether it's vaccines or drugs. We don't test anything with anything. Like, we might bring out a new painkiller. We don't test it with all the other drugs. And we never have any problems. So put that in your pipe and smoke it, Dr. Coleman, he might say.
And I would reply, don't have any problems, Hillary. What about the fact that doctor-induced disease, iatrogenesis, is now number three in this country and the Western world for causing illness?
Is it really?
It comes after cancer and the various heart and stroke diseases. The number of people, if you go into a hospital before all this COVID nonsense, if you went into a hospital and there were six people in beds on a ward, it would be a very small ward, but one in six people in hospital are there because they've been made ill by a doctor, mostly through drugs. Now, that is staggering, but it's true. That's the true incidence, that's the incidence of doctor-induced disease, largely through drugs, largely because doctors give drug A to people and they give drug B to people and they never bother to look and see whether A and B are known to cause problems, because actually we do know an awful lot about which drugs don't go with other drugs, but doctors don't seem to bother about it. In the far distant past, when I was a GP, I used to have little lists of drugs so that you could see whether it was safe to give somebody drug A and drug B.
Did you really? Let me ask you a question on that, because I have a theory. That's very interesting that you had a list. This is my theory. I've had it for years. Now, this might be bitterness now, because I didn't have the brains to be a doctor, right? This might be bitterness. But I have a theory. I have a theory that doctors of your generation, when you went to university, you actually learned the craft, the skills, and you did it properly, and you did it diligently, and you devoted most of your time to it. I'm not saying you wouldn't have had a social life, but I'm saying that you would have properly learned it and you would have given all of your time to it. My theory is, and I've put this to another doctor, that in recent years, maybe in the last couple of decades, cramming for exams has become more common. Now, I know this from my own experiences of university. And I'm thinking that doctors these days might not be able to recall as easily that which they have learned as doctors of your generation because of cramming. And because of a different, because we're living in a different time. Societies are different. Socialising is different. Now, that could be monumental bollocks, but that is my theory. What do you think?
Well, there are two things. I believe, if I wasn't taught to think, I learnt to think and to question. Doctors today, young doctors today, are not taught to think, and they're certainly not taught to question. They get into terrible trouble if they question, if they dare to question. That's why when you look at all the lists and names of doctors who are questioning what's going on, they're mostly senior doctors over the age of 40 or so. Younger doctors, all they seem to be doing is saying, have the vaccine, it's wonderful, yeah, have some vaccine, yeah. It's wonderful, have some more vaccine, have all the vaccines. And they seem to be supporting the government line. There aren't any young doctor journalists or whatever that I know of who are daring to question. They're too terrified and they're unable to think. The other thing, of course, is that the Agenda 21 policy, which we've talked about before, the Agenda 21 policy is to do exactly what you've said. It's to train people not to think, not to question, but to pass exams. That's all it's for. The schools have become cramming colleges, and they've reached the peak now, because the teachers are going to decide who gets the A-level grades or whatever next summer. So that the whole education process has been devalued, and the Agenda 21 plan is to stop all thinking, to stop all proper old-fashioned teaching, and simply to fill people with facts which they recite and then forget. That's the Agenda 21 way, because the Agenda 21 does not believe in proper education where you teach people to read, then point them in the direction of some books and hope that they veer off at different tangents and different angles and find things that they want to look at and find things that they can learn from. And then only when you do that are you able to be creative, because to be creative, you've got to be questioning. You can't, if you just sit there and accept a pile of stuff that you're told by your teachers, then how on earth are you ever going to learn to question what they're saying? You've got to be allowed to question. Young doctors aren't allowed to question. I know that's a generalization, and I'm sure there's some somewhere, except that if there are, they're probably being thrown out because you're not allowed to do it. You have to stick with the rules. And that's why I suspect there are so few who are questioning the vaccines and so many who are willing to actually become war criminals, although they don't know it yet, but they will. They will.
But they don't know any better. I hear you loud and clear. They just don't know any better. I'm inclined, as disgusted as I am, as you are, I can detach myself from it. It's difficult for you because you're a doctor. And I know, you know, you're right to criticise them. And you are giving them a little bit of a pass. I just think, because of everything you said, you know, forgive them for they know not what they do. I've got to ask you this. We've got about 3.5 minutes. By the way, just in case people are wondering, it would be easy for Dr. Vernon Coleman and myself to go over the time, you know, from time to time and go over the time. I like to keep this to 2 hours because it isn't on YouTube anymore. And it means that at 10 o'clock, at midnight, at 2 in the morning, and we have enormous amounts of listeners around the world listening to the repeats. That's why it must be kept at 2 hours. And it keeps you gagging for more Dr. Vernon Coleman anyway. So it's no bad thing. In the 3 minutes we have left, I want to ask you this. I had an email today. I can't verify its authenticity. I cannot. But it's from somebody who says, I kept this now for this moment. It's from somebody who says that one of his grandparents died in Basingstoke in the care home. And he said he was moved by something he read on the Richie Allen website the other day. Inquest. Should the families of those who died in Basingstoke be asking the coroner to ask for an inquest? And if they should, what are the odds that they'll actually get one?
Are you asking me what the odds are?
Well, I mean, would they get? I mean, should they ask for an inquest, number one? And number two, is there any chance they'll be given one?
I think they should ask for an inquest, and I think there's no chance that they would get one, I'm afraid. These are dark and difficult days. Right at the beginning, pathologists were told not to do post-mortems on patients who died of COVID-19 because it was too dangerous. This, remember, was an infection that had been downgraded to the level of the flu. I have got in front of me a pile of printouts of people who died immediately after having the vaccine. 181 dead, you know, 24 dead, whatever. And these are real people who were enjoying their years. They were given a vaccine and they died. And the government's agencies say, well, it's just all an accident.
Coincidence.
It is not an accident. It didn't happen by mistake. It didn't happen just because God decided it was time. They died because of the vaccines. And I believe this is true of you as well, Richie, but I will not have this vaccine. I don't care.
No
I would
way.
Rather die. You have to choose that you're prepared to die for something in life in order to live properly. And this is a question of dying for honour, integrity, respect, freedom, humanity. And I doubt if many of the people who are saying the vaccines are perfectly safe understand what any of that means, because they haven't investigated the vaccines. They don't know how awful these are. And believe me, the side effects, the adverse events we're seeing now are just the beginning. You wait 3 months, 6 months, 12 months. They should have been doing what I said weeks ago on this show. As soon as they started, they should have done a controlled clinical trial. 20,000 patients had the vaccine. 20,000 patients, the same age group, did not have the vaccine. And at the end of 12 months, you see how many are injured and how many are dead. That's the only way that they could have done a very a proper test on these vaccines in a very quick way, in a very secure, safe, cheap way. Did they do it?
No. Will they do it? No. Ask yourself why.
I'm not even going to dare to attempt to follow that. Will you be back next week? I make the assumption you will be. It might be the week after, but if you're back next week, all well and good.
If you're inviting me...
Oh, 100%. Back. Yeah, it's your slot every Monday until you don't want it. VernonColeman.com. The link to... Vernon is collating and documenting the reports of deaths. VernonColeman.com. Health, and you'll see all of that. And with his kind permission, I'm reposting those articles on richieallen.co.uk as well. But I would prefer that you went to vernoncoleman.com. And do send him a message and tell him to bring that website into the 21st century, or you'll beat the granny out of him when you meet him. Dr. Vernon Coleman, come on, last word to you.
My website's older than you are, Richie.
It's been around since Moses was in short trousers. Thanks for coming back today, and I can't wait to speak to you again next week. Cheers, Vernon. Bye for now. The great Vernon Coleman, Dr. Vernon Coleman, vernoncoleman.com. Thanks to him for his time today. That's it for the programme. Thanks to Kevin Barrett as well this evening. I really appreciate both of my guests. I will be back with you tomorrow at 5 o'clock UK time. I think it's me and you tomorrow. Got some plans. I think it's me and you. I'm not sure anyway. This programme begins repeating almost immediately every 2 hours. Go to richieallen.co.uk for articles and whatever. Thanks to Hayden Hewitt for all the work he's doing on that as well. Unpaid work, most of it. Top man, Hayden Hewitt. Closing out with this. Look after yourselves. Tomorrow, 5. Bye.